Last week we began this new series with Dr. Alan Meyer about the search for intimacy, looking at sexuality from a Christian perspective. And we're, over the next few weeks, we're going to be looking at everything from how to be healed from past mistakes in this area. Last week we looked at the origins and the power of sexuality. Tonight, six key kind of foundational principles when it comes to understanding sexuality from a Christian, a biblical perspective. So Alan Meyer's with us again. Welcome again.
Thank you, sir. It's great to be with you.
Yeah, these 6 points are really quite foundational, and they build on where we went last week in terms of the power of sexuality. Like you mentioned last week, you can actually have a child who is sexually inappropriately touched at such an early age, and yet decades later, they are still feeling it. That just is one hint that this is a very, very powerful force we're talking about.
No question about that. Let me quote Professor David Bennett, who's head of adolescent medicine, or he was head of adolescent medicine at New Children's Hospital in Sydney. He said this. He said, adolescent sexual health is a serious but largely neglected problem. He said, adolescents are eager to believe that sex is joyful. However, for many, it turns out to be destructive, miserable, painful, confusing, annoying, frightening, and ordinary, and they have no idea why. In fact, one of the articles that I recently read said this: young boys in a serious sexual relationship plummet to suicidal levels when an affair ends. For young men, early sexual activity and promiscuity are closely linked to vandalism, truancy, drug abuse and binge drinking. And every one of those are serious sociological issues. Mm. When you care about people, you just have to care about the way in which they are educated on sex and the way in which you help them to manage their sex life. Because the fact of the matter is it has a huge impact on the way life unfolds for people.
Yeah, which we've had powerfully demonstrated the last couple of weeks. So the book of Genesis, first book in the Bible, has the first couple of chapters there really lays out this profound vision of what humans are, who they are, and how they're made. Yeah. And intertwined with all of that is, you know, these principles of human sexuality as well. You've brought six key points out of those first couple of chapters. Let me give you the phrase, and you can, again, unpack it like we were doing last week. You talk about how the book of Genesis talks about the value of us as persons.
Yeah. The book of Genesis says you are not an animal. The book of Genesis says you are not the end product of a mindless machine. In fact, the Bible says, God said, let us make man in our own image and let's make them male and female. That means this, that a man is a being created in the image of the God who manufactured the universe. A woman is a being created in the image of the God who manufactured the universe. People are incredibly valuable. One of the issues that we face with sexuality, particularly I've focused a fair bit in the past few years on male sexuality, because 95% of all sex crimes are committed by men against women and children. Mm. So you really do need to give particularly men a lot of help on this, because sex in a man's experience is often a very urgent kind of a pressure. And as a result, men frequently impose themselves on women. We need to recognize that people are incredibly valuable. And just because you've got the hots, just because you have a strong and urgent cry for sexual intimacy, does not give you the right to damage another human life. Mm. This changed my life. I mean, I remember when I was teaching on this at a youth camp many years ago. And at that stage, I'd been married to my sweetheart for 10 years. I met my wife in high school. We've been married now for 41 years. But here I was teaching at a youth camp. And I remember reading that passage out of the Bible to these young people. And I said to them, boys, I want you to stop for a moment and turn and look at the girls in the room. Do you realize that these girls are not just a face and a figure? Because when sex gets on the agenda, it's very easy to reduce a human being to a face and a figure.
Sure.
I like the way you look. You know, she's got nice curves. Man, I'd like to get my hands on her. Mm. Well, I'd like to get you to lift your thinking just a little higher, because she's not just a face and a figure. She is a miracle created in the image of God. Her one life is worth more than all the stuff on this planet put together. Jesus said, what would it profit a man to gain the whole world and lose his own soul? One human soul is worth more than all the dumb stuff on planet Earth put together. Stop for a minute and realize your urgent sexual passion may well damage a human life. And when I was saying that to those kids, it suddenly occurred to me, I'd been raised in the Big M society of Australia, where the whole idea of being a boy was to find a girl in her bikini on the beach and get the hots for her and pursue her and conquer her and get to have sex. I grew up in that environment. That wasn't my life, but that's the mindset I grew up
sure.
with. And I suddenly realised I had never really understood how precious the woman I was married to, in fact, was. It changed my entire life. I was married to a miracle, and I began to look at her and treat her differently from that day.
Mm-hmm. So important. The second point you bring out of the book of Genesis is that humans share this universal cry for intimacy, which obviously needs to be contained.
That's exactly right. Genesis puts it this way. And the Lord God said, "It's not good that man should be alone. I'll make a helper comparable to him." It's a fascinating thing that it's woven into us, this deep cry to find someone. I was fortunate. I grew up in a home where my father loved my mother. My dad thought my mum was the princess of the universe. He treated her that way all the days of my life, and it left a profound... desire within me to find my other half. Mm. And the reality is that inside every human heart, there is this deep longing for intimacy. Now, sometimes we don't know how to respond well to it, and sometimes the way we respond to it isn't helpful, but it's important to recognize that every human being has it. It does set people up in some ways to be manipulated. You can manipulate people by giving them the come on, well, there's so many different ways in which this
The way you dress, the things you say.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And I think it's vital to recognize that since in every heart there is this cry for intimacy, we do need to take care of one another, not to abuse that, not to use that as a point of access to get what I want personally, but have no intention of honoring the value of that life and guarding the value of that life. And so I must refrain from allowing my own cry for intimacy or someone else's desire or need for intimacy to be a mechanism by which I actually do them harm.
Mm-hmm. Open House is what you're listening to right across the nation. We're doing this series on the search for intimacy, sexuality from a Christian perspective. Dr. Alan Meyer is behind the material, run this kind of course in churches all around Australia. Talking about six principles of human sexuality that come out of the book of Genesis, first book in the Bible. So, each person is valuable. Number two, each person has a universal cry for intimacy. Number three, you talk about God being a matchmaker.
This is a fascinating one. This is a beauty. It is interesting to me, if you read the book of Genesis, that when God created Eve, he brought her and introduced her to the man. Now, if I understand it rightly, there wasn't even a 50-50% chance of getting it wrong, because he was the only man and she was the only woman. And yet God himself did the introduction, and I experienced that. It was an extraordinary thing. I remember being an 18-year-old high school graduate, finishing my first year of university, sitting on my vehicle, my car, in Collins Street in Melbourne, and suddenly across my heart drifted this question. I wonder what happened to Helen Tew. I'd known her in high school. I drove around to her home, discovered that she was in a little time of life crisis, and within 7 days I had come to the conclusion that I could share my whole life with this girl. And I felt like God introduced me to her. He kind of made sure that
7 days is pretty quick.
he got the two of us together, and I think it's incredible that when Adam first saw Eve, this cry came out of his mouth. This at last is bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. In other words, oh mate, take a look at that. You know, a bloke would leave his mum and his dad for somebody like that. And the reality is that if you have a confidence that God knows who you are and he knows your need, you need to add to that confidence that he also is aware of your deep cry for someone with whom you could share a wonderful life. And I take great encouragement from this passage. To see, I think God's a matchmaker. I think God is the greatest romantic that ever has been and that ever will be. He invented the biochemistry, the nervous attachments, all the pathways, the neuronal pathways through the brain that allow for the thrill of arousal, of sexual intimacy, and for orgasm. It is an extraordinarily complex mechanism, and it is an extraordinarily thrilling mechanism. It was an invented mechanism. God did it. He cares about you. He cares about individual people finding someone who is appropriate for them. And I encourage young people that rather than going out and trying to grab somebody, because in our desperation, and I remember as a teenager wondering, would anybody ever love me? You know, will I be the one that gets... That nobody ever really likes. And yet I married one of the prettiest girls in school. And it wasn't because I was the best looking. I was on the fringe of the nerds most of my life. But I won the heart of the prettiest girl in school. And I did it because God introduced her to me and introduced me to her on the inside. And he awakened her heart to love me. And I can say to young men and women, look, one of the dangers of this cry for intimacy is that you can kind of spend your life wandering around trying to connect with somebody. And if you were to just live a full life, go to university, get a career, serve your community, live a full life, God has ways of introducing you, connecting you, getting you in the right room at the right time to meet the right person, because he cares about that kind of stuff.
It's comforting, isn't it? He's actually in control. Fourth point you actually have, which leads nicely on, is sex is an act of covenant, I guess we could say agreement, and it has no place outside that covenant of marriage.
This goes to the core of something we'll need to probably come back to, and that is the fact that sex changes you. But the idea of marriage as a covenant means that you stick to someone. You make a decision that before you engage in sexual intimacy, you're prepared to pay the price. And I think the price for sexual intimacy is that you're prepared to stick around and live your life through all the highs and lows with that person that you have engaged in sexual intimacy with. And one of the major reasons for that is because sex changes who you are on the inside. To have casual sex is to leave marks in another human being. You have no intention of sticking around to fulfill the consequences of what you just did. And that others would do the same with you is a profound disregard for human value and for human dignity. And so God says this, for this cause a man leaves his mum and his dad and he sticks to his wife and they'll become one flesh. Sex is a consequence of marriage, and marriage is a commitment. It is a commitment to somebody that I will be here for you. I will not simply eat your fruit and run. I will stay. I'll live my life with you. I'll share the challenges and the burdens and the joys of life. I will be with you. And my wife and I have built something fantastic in the last 41 years. I'm so grateful to be able to say that my entire sexual experience in life is with that one woman. I don't have to come to my marriage bed with the memories of other sexual encounters with other women, because I haven't had any. It's part of not only the bond, but part of the strength of what we have together.
Which kind of leads nicely to the fifth point, that sexuality really is holy. It's separate. It's different.
It is a holy thing. Sex is not ordinary. Sex is something profound, valuable. It is significant. It changes you and it cements you to another person. It's designed by God to be glue. And if it's managed rightly, it will be glue. If it's not managed rightly, it can become dynamite. And it's one of the reasons people blow apart and can never form a great relationship.
Then in the third chapter of Genesis, we have what is described as the fall of humankind. When rebellion enters their hearts, when they just say, right, God, we're not going to live your way. And then that's when we see them ushered out of the beautiful Garden of Eden. All the weeds start to come up. It's a beautiful portrayal of what has actually happened to the world. This is a fallen, broken world. And unfortunately, we are also fallen, broken people. We can't talk about human sexuality without bringing that most important principle from the book of Genesis into the conversation. We are fallen beings, and that changes the way we approach sexuality.
It does. The brokenness of the human soul touches every area of life, and sex is one of them. So that it means that whereas sex was designed, for example, to be glue, mismanaged. You'll find marriages that blow apart because here is a man who has never learned to honour his wife, or a wife has never learned to honour her husband, and that their sex is not beautiful and it does not glue them together. It's in some ways damaging and destructive. It was never intended to be, but broken human beings express their brokenness in every area of their life, and sex is one of them. Rape, molestation are profound expressions of selfishness to the destruction of another human life. Well, that's a manifestation of a broken life expressed through sex. I think one of the most, as a result of that, I think there are five groups of people in every community that desperately need really good discipleship and really good help in managing their sex lives. We're talking right now about young people. This course, The Search for Intimacy, is needed because young people need help. The second group that need help are men, because they are broken. Men are broken. And when they express their sexuality, it all too often, 95% of all sex crimes are committed by men against women and children. And there are reasons for that. And I talk about that in the program I've developed called Valiant Man. Married people need help. You see, we make the assumption people will get married and sex will be great. And it isn't. Sex is a learned behavior. And broken people have often brought their brokenness into their marriages, and no one has ever helped them to restore that. And so even in their marriage, sex is not great. The fourth group that need help are survivors of sexual abuse. Sexual abuse is so damaging. And if it doesn't receive help, then in our brokenness, that trauma, that pain, will then impose itself on all of our relationships for the rest of our life. The fifth group that need help are those who are struggling with the whole issue of gender confusion. Am I gay or am I straight? I don't have much to say about that simply because it's not my issue. I've confined myself to the bits I kind of know about.
It's not your specialty, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, it's not this is your specialty. Well, we're going to be exploring more of that over the next few weeks, the healing aspects and everything. And next week, talking about virginity and courtship, and I guess it just kind of goes to show that this isn't ordinary stuff. We've so cheapened sexuality by the way that we've thrown it about in the media, thrown it about in the way that we live. This is something holy, special, precious, divine, and next week we'll probably ground that even further. So I'm looking forward to the conversation continuing.
Thank you, mate. Look forward to it.